We remain amazed daily at the ways in which science can come to grips with the failures and oddities of the human body, but people in medicine admit they do not have all the answers. Far from it. So it certainly gains attention when somebody comes back to health from a life-threatening condition. It happened to a man who lives in the Washington, D.C. area. His case, leukemia in remission, came to the attention of a Rogue Valley oncologist. They wrote a book together called N of One, one man's Harvard-documented remission of incurable cancer using only natural methods. Glenn Sabin is the patient. Dawn Lamon is the oncologist and writer here in the Rogue Valley and in the studio with me. Dawn, good to see you.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
So before we get into Glenn Sabin's story, tell us a bit about you and how you first connected with him.
I saw a blog post by Glenn Sabin, and it was a short story about how he was managing his leukemia with only lifestyle measures. And this caught my attention in about 2011. And at that time, I didn't know it, but he was struggling with the worst part of his disease. But I saw this on the internet, and I called him up. And I said, look, do you have any documentation of this? I was pretty harsh. I am used to hearing a lot of claims that actually never pan out. The patient actually doesn't have this disease, or they actually had some conventional treatment but attribute their recovery to an alternative treatment. But everything in Glenn's case panned out. He had documentation from his Harvard and Johns Hopkins oncologists, and he had kept all his records over the years. He had stayed in touch with his oncologists. And I said to him, well, we had a two-hour phone conversation that day, and I said, you're going to write a book about this, aren't you? And he said, no, I really don't think so. I don't really like to write. And I said, well, you have to write a book. And anyway, I prevailed upon him to write a book after I promised to write it. So that was how that came about. And it took us about 4 years. And during that time, he actually had a very had a great setback to his health and was able to completely overcome it, as best we can tell, continuing on his course. And that is what the book is about.
So you really do start this process as a skeptic yourself, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And I remain a skeptic. I want to say right off that although Glenn says he attributes his recovery to his lifestyle, I don't know what his recovery is attributed to. And I wrote the book not as an answer to cancer, but as a call to all of us to reflect and investigate these unusual occurrences, because I think there's gold there.
It's something to be discovered in one person's case that might apply to more.
Absolutely. And everybody's case is different, of course. And Glenn's case shows that everybody's case is different. I think he's the exception that proves the rule. We aren't looking at those in general in science. We're looking at the large picture, which is good in its own way, but it cannot, it has failed so far to give us cures for a disease that afflicts quite a few people.
So let's get the particulars of Glenn Sabin's story. His diagnosis came relatively young, and it was CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia?
Yes, and that's a disease of, it's a malignancy, a type of cancer. It's a disease of the blood. The type of cells that are in excess in this particular type of cancer are called lymphocytes. They typically fight infection. They grow in the bone marrow and then travel from the bone marrow into the bloodstream and can be measured there. And if they're measured in excess amounts, the diagnosis of leukemia can be made. And Glenn's case was unusual in that he was very young. Most people with this particular type of leukemia are rather elderly, 50 or above. And Glenn at 28, as you say, was extremely young. So that's unusual in itself.
On the scale of aggressive cancers, on the scale of aggression, I guess, is the emphasis here, where does chronic lymphocytic leukemia rank?
Well, I'm not going to give it a number because I don't think anybody's done that, and we don't have a scale to say such a thing. But we know that the typical lifespan of someone with chronic lymphocytic leukemia is rather long. A lot of people will live for 2 to 5 years, many for 10 years, and a few for decades. That's another mystery that we haven't solved, and it shows us that chronic lymphocytic leukemia, it's a mouthful in itself, is, obviously very many diseases, maybe as many diseases as the patients who have it.
Oh, wow. So how far had it advanced in Glenn Sabin, and how far along did he start changing lifestyle?
He had a pretty advanced case when he presented. He had a very large spleen. It was several pounds. And the disease required that he actually have his spleen removed for safety's sake. An enlarged spleen can rupture and cause bleeding and death. So that was done at the very beginning, and that was the only conventional treatment that he had. But his case was fairly advanced in terms of the enlarged spleen. And he did not have enlarged lymph nodes, which a lot of patients do with this disease. And his blood counts were slightly abnormal, but not extremely so. So I would say he had a moderate to severe case. And whether it was severe or not actually depends on the various scales that are used to measure leukemia. In those days, he fit into a moderate to severe level on the scales that were used in those days. We have new scales now. This was in the early 1990s. We have new scales now that look at the molecular changes in the cells and can give us a much better picture of what the prognosis might be. But Glenn did not have the ability to do that in those days.
So about a minute to a break here. How far has medicine advanced? And this is medicine that Glenn Sabin largely did not use. How much more do we know about treating CLL in that time period?
We know quite a bit. And I would never say that someone should not avail themselves of the newer conventional treatments that we have. But in those days, there was very little. Now we have some monoclonal antibodies. We can combine those with various chemotherapy drugs especially some new targeted therapies that are very effective but very expensive, to the tune of $100,000 per year for a lifetime. So although we've made some advances, they are, they have their drawbacks too.
Okay, much more to talk about with Dawn Lamond. She is an MD and an oncologist, and she is the co-author with Glenn Sabin of a book about his recovery from chronic lymphocytic leukemia. I should say remission, not recovery. The book is called N of One. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dawn Lamond, an oncologist doing business in the Rogue Valley at Oregon Integrative Oncology. She is an MD and an MPH, Master of Public Health, and the author of a book about man's remission in a case of chronic lymphocytic leukemia. The book is called N of One, One Man's Harvard-Documented Remission of Incurable Cancer Using Only Natural Methods. Dawn Lamond she did most of the work writing the book with Glenn Sabin, who had the case. You can join us on the exchange with your questions or comments, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So back to the beginning of Glenn Sabin's case. I mean, what's normal for a number of tests before you actually reach a diagnosis of cancer?
Usually these cases are diagnosed incidentally. Patients come in without symptoms with chronic lymphocytic leukemia in most cases and are diagnosed by the doctor noticing an abnormal blood test, specifically an elevated lymphocyte count. And that was the case with Glenn Sabin. He felt well, although when you press him, he'll say, well, maybe I was a little bit tired. His stomach was distended. He thought he was obese from his wife's wonderful cooking. Those were the only things that he might have noticed. And basically he says, I felt like a tank at the time. He was young. He was lifting weights. He had he had just gotten married. He was planning a family. He was working on his business. And his doctor called him in and said, your blood tests look like leukemia. And that was the first time he'd ever heard of such a thing. So the tests that he underwent were a CT scan to look for swollen lymph nodes. He underwent a physical examination, which showed the enlarged spleen. He had a bone marrow biopsy, and that was the gold standard for diagnosis in those days for this disease. Nowadays, we can make the diagnosis with a test called flow cytometry. It doesn't necessarily require a bone marrow biopsy, although most patients will also undergo a bone marrow biopsy. So those are the tests that he had in those days, and those were the things that made his diagnosis and set him on his course.
So as an oncologist, I mean, by the time somebody gets to you, they already know they have cancer, right? You don't have to break.
Exactly, yes. So by the time they get to me, I'm not making the diagnosis, and that's left to the primary care doctors or perhaps a surgeon somewhere lower in the pipeline. Yes, not lower, but previous in the pipeline.
So how do you gain the confidence of patients and get them ready for what lies ahead, which I'm sure in a lot of cases is a very arduous process?
It's different for each patient. Some patients require a lot of information and knowledge, and they will come in having searched the internet these days, which is great. I'm all for that. Some patients need someone to say, this is what you need to do. You definitely have to gain the trust of the patient, and that requires, I think, a sensitivity to all different types of personalities. And that's one of the parts of the art of medicine, finding out what your patient needs. And that can change from day to day. Some days patients need very different things than they needed last week.
Well, Glenn Sabin went home and told his wife, I'm going to die. I mean, how many people with chronic lymphocytic leukemia think that's the case, and how correct are they?
Well, you know, he recalls that his doctor told him that. It's very difficult to say. And his doctor, that particular doctor is no longer in practice. But people do get the message that they're going to die. I think a lot of people hear the word cancer when it's applied to them and a bomb goes off in their brain and they really can't process, you know, the rest of the conversation. And that's another thing that the oncologist is aware of, that the conversation needs to be had several times in different settings and at different times for the patient to process all of this information. It was thought in those days that everyone with chronic lymphocytic leukemia was going to die of that disease.
Dawn Lamont is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author with Glenn Sabin of a book about his remission in a case of chronic lymphocytic leukemia using alternative methods. The book is called N of One. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Grab your headphones there, Dawn. We have a call for you. Let's go to Nancy in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, hi. I wanted to understand why this case is relevant to other people's case. What, you know, did he just get lucky, or what makes this case important?
All right. Excellent question. Thanks for that, Nancy. Appreciate it.
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, is this case relevant to other people? Yes and no. Would another person have the same results as Glenn from doing the same things that Glenn did? It's very unlikely. So the thing that's relevant about Glenn's case is that it points out that we really have a long way to go to understanding this particular disease and all sorts of cancers. And it's really a call to all of us and to the medical profession as well as the alternative medical professions to step up and investigate these cases in a really rigorous way. And that's how it relates to other patients. Not that one should go out and do what Glenn Sabin did. Again, that's unlikely to be successful because everybody's different. But it is a call to question everything that we know. None of us are very good at curing cancer if it's advanced. I think that it's safe to say that advanced cancer is very difficult for any profession to approach and get rid of. So as far as Glenn's case being applicable to everyone, only in the sense that a question should always enter every doctor's mind and every patient's mind: is this the right treatment for me? And are there other options? And how are we going to measure whether this treatment is working for me?
So his approach sounds a little piecemeal. He was recovering from the surgery. You mentioned he had a splenectomy. His spleen weighed 7 pounds. They normally weigh, what, 2 pounds or something like
that? Yes, yes. And very enlarged.
So after he finally felt well enough to actually start exercising, he went to the gym first. So mm-hmm. Not necessarily doctor's orders here, but
exactly. He was not very good at following doctor's orders. And, you know, he'll be the first to admit that he did not approach this in a particularly organized way. He was casting around for anything at that point. Most of the doctors at that time were advocating chemotherapy and a new drug called Rituxan, new drug at that time, if he were to have symptoms that were bothering him. But they were not offering a cure, so he felt pretty helpless. He felt that, you know, I've got to do something. So he was casting around and looking everywhere. He went to the gym because that's what he did. That was one of the ways that he took care of his health, so as soon as he could get back to that, he went back to that, and I think that helped him. Whether that pushed back the cancer, I don't know, but it certainly helped him psychologically.
And then he had an option for another surgical procedure. We talking bone marrow transplant? Was that what would have been the next possible or logical step?
Yes. So he was offered that. That was an experimental treatment at that time for chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and it turned out to be a complete failure for in the ways that they were doing it at that time. So he correctly, although he couldn't have known this, and his doctors couldn't have known that, he correctly dodged that offer and went on with some other ideas that he had.
He also resisted the bone marrow transplant for a very personal reason, didn't he?
Yes, he wanted to have children, and you know, that was an issue for him because the bone marrow transplant might have prevented that. So,
would have rendered him sterile.
It would have. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So he went to the gym. We established that. Decided not to get the bone marrow transplant. Looked at his diet. I mean, what you mentioned that his wife was a wonderful cook, but what kinds of things was she cooking, and how much was he eating, and what did he change it to?
Well, that I can personally attest to. His wife Linda cooked me a meal once, and it was beyond fantastic. But in those days, he was reading the cancer literature, the natural cancer literature. And in those days, it was very much, you know, a vegetarian diet is the way to go, and juicing. And he also, his wife, was very much into cutting out grains. I think we've changed our ideas on diet somewhat since then. But that was what he did. And it was a big improvement from his previous diet. He used to like cheesesteaks, I think, some East Coast greasy sandwich that he used to love, and
must be a Philadelphia boy.
Yeah, and ho-hos. It was some kind of pastry. And large coffees, I think, from like gas stations. So that was what he used to eat before. So anything that he did in that regard was a vast improvement. And he was very interested in cleaning up his water. And
so diet and exercise. I mean, what else did he change?
He changed his water. He installed some big reverse osmosis filtration system in his entire house. I think that was, you know, in the four figures to do that. And his wife tried to interest him in formal meditation, and he didn't take to that. He tried it a couple of times, but that wasn't a big thing for him. And he also took some supplements. He experimented heavily with many supplements, and he enlisted the aid of a couple of pharmacists to do that with, and that was another big part of his program.
I noticed that Ross Pelton, who worked in Ashland at least until recently, I assume he's still around.
Ross is still around, and he was in San Diego in the days that he was discussing Glenn's health with Glenn. And Ross put him on a supplement program first, and I think Glenn used that for several years and was doing well. He changed his supplement program with the help of another pharmacist who was in the Washington, D.C. area when he had his first problem with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. Made some headway there. At least that's his interpretation of what happened. And so, yes, he was very interested in various supplements. He didn't want to write the details of his supplement plans in the book because he didn't want people to get the wrong idea and think that they should take these particular supplements. He wanted to be very clear that this was tailor-made for him specifically. And I want to reiterate that. I don't want anyone to read this book and say, oh, well, Glenn Sabin took these supplements, so I'm going to take these supplements to treat my cancer. That would be a huge mistake and would be unfortunate.
The book is called N of One. It's about the remission in chronic lymphocytic leukemia of one Glenn Sabin of the Washington, D.C. area. Dawn Lamont is an oncologist working in the Ashland area, and she wrote the book with him. Subtitled One Man's Harvard Documented Remission of Incurable Cancer Using Only Natural Methods, 800-838-3760. If you have something you'd like to add to the conversation or something to ask, and your phone calls, your emails as well, will go to jx@jeffnet.org. So the full purpose of N of One then is to advise people to take charge of their own recoveries rather than just necessarily go with the orthodoxy on it?
Yes, that was Glenn's purpose in writing this book, was to show other patients that they can work with their oncologists in a somewhat different way than most people are thinking of when they're first thinking about going to the doctor. And I wanted to participate in writing this book because I wanted physicians to also think about working with patients in a different way. And I'm not the only one who's doing this. There's a lot of traction right now with N of One. It's become a buzzword in science and medicine, mainly because we have new tools now. In the last 5 years, an explosion of technology allowing us to look very deeply at the very individual aspects of people's cancers has come into the hands of clinicians, doctors working with patients. And even more so will that occur in the next 5 years. And so we're seeing a real revolution. We doctors are having to therefore develop new research paradigms. And we used to use thousands of patients at once and compare one change with a control group. We have better tools now for that. That hasn't worked very well for cancer. It works well for things like infectious diseases, where one antibiotic will treat everybody. In cancer, that's been pretty dismal results with those kinds of trials. So we're now, you know, adding the N of one.
We're talking to Don Lemon here on the Jefferson Exchange, and we have a question here from Deborah in Ashland. I wonder where else in the field of oncology Dr. Lemon has seen lifestyle, specifically nutritional changes, affect the risk of cancer or cancer recurrence. There's a new interest in fasting, 24-hour or even 7 to 10-day fasting. What is your opinion of its relationship to cancer? And while you're at it, thoughts on the work of Dr. Thomas Seyfried or others who have written about the metabolic basis of cancer? That's from Deborah in Ashland.
Okay. A great question. So, yes, in the last few years, fasting or the induction of ketosis, which is fat burning instead of carbohydrate burning, has been has risen to prominence in the minds of many cancer researchers. It's now in development in animal studies. It's been very, very successful in animal studies. And I want to say that we are hopeful that this will add some to our armamentarium of cancer treatment. It's not a treatment in itself. The animal studies show that fasting by itself isn't as powerful as combining fasting with chemotherapy or targeted therapy or radiation therapy. So no one, again, should think that fasting will cure cancer. It doesn't. But fasting certainly is of great interest to me. And I have had some patients on their own try fasting with chemotherapy and with good results in terms of no terrible effects from the fasting itself. Fasting is safe. We'll have to wait and see how it affects the actual outcome. But that's an area of – that's a hot area of study right now. And
go ahead.
Oh, Thomas Seyfried has written a book called The Metabolic Basis of Cancer, mm-hmm. something like that. He relates his studies of mostly glioblastoma. And the work is interesting. Certainly, the ketogenic diet, which is a high-fat, low-protein, low-carbohydrate diet, which is applied to have the subject enter the state of ketosis, isn't also a cure for cancer. And in human studies, it hasn't panned out greatly. It seems that after a few weeks, the tumors, mostly brain tumors that are studied, seem to get around the fasting as they get around to other treatments, chemotherapy, radiation. So we still have some work to do with that. But it may be an important adjunct to treatment in the future, and it's of great interest.
So you mentioned that Glenn Sabin had the splenectomy. He refused the bone marrow transplant. You've been talking about chemotherapy and radiation. Did he do any of those other than the splenectomy? Did he really get any mainstream treatment in addition to what he was doing with his lifestyle choices?
He did not. Every time he got sick with his leukemia, his doctors would recommend this, and he refused. But I want to point out that what he did that was different is that he did not leave his oncologists, and they did not fire him. They didn't say, my way or the highway, as you hear of some doctors saying. They kept in touch with him. He asked them to, and they did. And they followed him. And he says if he had gotten worse on his own program, he would have, to save his life, undergone these treatments. But he was not particularly impressed with the promise of the conventional treatment, which was that in those days, we cannot cure you. We can maybe make you comfortable.
Was there anything that he did that if you had been his oncologist, would have driven you up a wall?
I think all of it would have driven me up a wall. as an oncologist, you actually get used to this. There are a lot of patients who do similar things, and you help them as best you can. And one of the things that I'm really interested in with patients who refuse conventional treatment is, all right, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But how are you going to measure whether this what you are doing is working or not. I'm assuming they're going to do something, you know, whether it's take an herb or exercise or meditate. I'm not saying that any of those things are useful, but if they feel that they might be useful, how are we going to measure this? And I insist that they measure something, and so that if they know if the measurements are going in the wrong direction, they're continuing this with their eyes open.
Did working with Glenn Sabin change your approach as an oncologist?
Yes. Now, I want to point out that I was never Glenn's treating oncologist, we only collaborated on this book, and I had nothing to do with his treatment. It made me much more eager to promote new paradigms of cancer study, specifically single-patient, single-subject trial design. And I really think that that, you know, we all have to step up, the naturopaths, the chiropractors, the MDs. We have to really be much more rigorous in our evaluation and treatment and of these patients and try to figure things out in these really interesting cases, these outliers.
So the treatment group is one, hence the title, N of One.
Exactly.
One man's Harvard-documented remission of incurable cancer using only natural methods. Glenn Sabin, the patient, now lives in the Washington, D.C. area and apparently promotes doing this sort of thing to other people.
Yes, he does. He coaches cancer patients on how to speak to their physicians advocates for the N of One paradigm.
And Dawn Lamont helped him write the book. She's an oncologist in practice in the Ashland area at Oregon Integrative Oncology, OregonIO.com. Good job on the book, and thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Good to have you.